flew into O'Hare last night and drove over. So it's very nice. It's an awesome venue. What a great conference. So really fun to be here. I grew up in Iowa. That's where I'm from. So as you heard, I teach at Dort. I actually went to Western Christian, the high school that I ended up teaching at after graduation. I'm a Dort grad, and now I'm back at Dort. But I have a master's degree from Dort, and I have a doctoral degree from the University of Florida. So that's kind of my educational background. My role at Dort is I teach our secondary students, so students who will be middle school, high school teachers. My background is in English. I teach our English methods class. I also teach our applied ed psych class, and I am the director of the program there. So I'm responsible for licensure, accreditation, some of that fun stuff. So I also host a podcast. If any of you are interested, we're recording a live session at 2, but that's really fun with a couple of colleagues who are here also. So I kind of fell into that unwillingly.
What's the podcast called?
It's called Hallway Conversations. Yeah, so two other Dort professors and I, Matt Beamers and Dave Mulder, do that. So, how I came to the topic for today. A lot of my work in teaching is around adolescent development. So we think about, I'm in the middle of the unit right now with my seniors who will go student teach in the spring, where we talk about issues in development of adolescents, and we talk about their powerful emotions and how to use those instead of let them be used against their learning in the classroom. And I think that writing is such an opportunity for us as teachers to help them connect their emotions to their academic work, to help them make meaning of their lives, to help them see who they are in Christ, and to share and build community in a Christian classroom. So like we heard this morning, one of the pieces that make Christian education distinctive is that community. And so the session I'm going to present to you today is born out of a unit that I do in my English methods class. So this is what I really base my teaching of methods of teaching writing to my future English teachers. And I had to boil it down a little bit because we only have an hour. So I'm going to go kind of quickly, but we are going to write a little bit in here as well. We're going to share a little bit, and hopefully you come away with some tangibles and some good ideas. All right, so our learning targets for today are: one, through a writing experience with your colleagues who are in the room, I hope you can connect with your voice as a writer. And we're going to talk about why that's important today. And then number two, I want you to learn how your own writing can inform your teaching and improve the writing of your students. So that's kind of the concept that we're going to build this session around. So we're going to consider it. We're going to read and discuss some short passages from a book that you have in your hand. We're going to engage in a guided quick write and be invited to share something you wrote. You're going to have an invitation. You're not going to have a mandatory sharing, and I'm going to go first, okay? And we're going to debrief on that a little bit. We're going to learn how this strategy helps students build skills and how you can incorporate it into longer pieces of writing, and then we're just going to have a short reflection, okay? So the first thing we're going to do, we're going to do a protocol called Go-Go-Mo, and it is on the front of this sheet right here. So Go-Go-Mo stands for give one, get one, and move on. Yes, absolutely. So you have a colored quote that I gave you, and you have a sheet in front of you. This is how it's going to work. And I even wrote down the directions for you. Here we go. You're going to read over your passage and jot down a two-word highlight on the scorecard below. So round one, you're going to put whatever paper color you have in your hand in that box so you can keep track of which ones you've seen. Okay? And then I want you to read it and write a two-word highlight. Okay, so I'm going to give you an opportunity to do that first.
Go ahead.
It's this piece we're reading. It's this piece we're commenting on.
Correct. Yes. We'll do about 30 more seconds. Okay, the next thing we're going to do is you're going to get up, you're going to mingle with each other, and you're going to find someone who has a different colored piece of paper than you. Okay? So, and then what you're going to do is you're going to share your reaction to the quote. You don't necessarily have to read the quote to them because you're going to give it to them after you share. Right? So you're going to give one, get one, and move on. So you're going to switch pieces of paper after you find someone with a different color than yours. So you're going to share your two-word highlight, your partner's going to share their two-word highlight, and you're going to trade pieces of paper, and then we're going to do the same thing. Second round, we're all going to sit back down, we're going to write a two-word highlight for round two, then we'll get up and do it again. So I'll kind of do the rounds and tell you what, when, and where, and referee that, but you can go ahead and get up, mingle, find someone with a different color than you, share your two-word highlight, and trade.
Thank you. have your slides?
Yes, of course.
Oh, yes, yes, absolutely.
Here, right here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, you should have your final one. Go ahead and why don't you return to your seats and write your final two-word highlight. And you can see on the bottom there, after you write your two-word highlight, there is a place for you just to kind of synthesize your thinking just a little bit. What are some takeaways from all four rounds that you've had? Would anybody be willing to share a couple of their takeaways, or one? What was just one thing you took away? Yeah.
You can't really be a writing teacher unless you write yourself, because they can smell fake when from far away.
They're good at that, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Yeah, so they can tell when you are not practicing what you are teaching.
Yes.
Yep. So you need to be a writer to be a writing teacher. Good. What else?
I think tapping into the lives and minds of your students, and not just giving them a list of 100 different topics.
Okay.
One of these, forcing them to write about something.
Right.
They don't want to write about.
So help them connect their writing to things they care about instead of random topics from a list. Good. What else?
Actually, on the negative, I put teaching writing is difficult and exhausting.
It is. You're absolutely right. It is hard.
Yeah.
It's hard and good.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Good takeaway. Yeah.
I wrote creative, passionate writing takes time and inspiration.
It does. Yeah. Creative writing takes time and inspiration. Things that we are sometimes short on in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
People like to listen and tell stories.
Yes. Yeah, that's how we're created, right? People like to listen and tell stories, and stories are great for teaching, right? Parables. Yeah. Anything else? Okay. Oh, go ahead. No, you're good.
Good writing doesn't just happen. Kids need space to develop their voice through free writing and intentional instruction from their teachers.
That's a great takeaway. They need time. They need space. It doesn't just happen. And if we don't provide them a model for it, they can't just pull it out of thin air, right? And so Penny Kittle, in her book, she has a book called Right Beside Them. And I have a list of resources at the end of the presentation that I'll put up here. And I also requested that book to be, I think, is there like a place where they sell books? Yep. So I think it's there if you want to go check it out. I also have a copy of it that I'll put out up here. But that's the book that we read in my methods class. It's called Right Beside Them. And she has a list in there of reasons why she didn't write with her students and why she was wrong. And I found that really compelling. So I'm just going to share that really quickly. She says, first, I wasn't a writer. I read all of those books from Don Murray and Don Graves, and I would think, sure, fine, you're a writer. Of course you write with your students. I can't do it. I'm not a writer. But, she says, I wasn't supposed to be a writer, just someone trying to write, like them. Right? Our kids are not writers, yet we ask them to write all the time. And so should we be asking them to do things that we ourselves are not willing to do? In fact, I was a better model because my hesitations and insecurities were just like theirs. It was such a relief to know that I didn't have to be good at it, just trying was enough. I couldn't see, she says, how it would matter if I wrote with students. There were dozens of books in my classroom, so students certainly didn't need me when they had Sandra Cisneros and Harper Lee and F. Scott Fitzgerald. But the problem with that is that all of those authors of books in my room were great models of product, but not process. That was my job as a teacher. Since I didn't have to create great products, the pressure was off. And that's when sometimes we do create good products too, I think. Third, I didn't understand what to model and how. I had never seen anyone write anything or talk about how they did it, so I wasn't ready to teach from my writing. But doing the writing itself taught me what to teach. It was that simple. I knew what my writers needed because I was inside the process of writing the genre we were studying. It actually became much easier to plan for my workshop each day. Teaching future teachers is kind of a weird experience. It's a little bit meta because if you don't practice the pedagogy that you are instilling in them, they can see the fake, right? So I am incredibly intentional with the pedagogy that I choose to use in my education classroom. And I always tell them what I'm doing, right? Because how are they going to learn the craft unless we name it for them and recognize it? And so that's one thing that I learned from my friend Dave, who's also here. He always like actually says, look, I'm stepping out of my body and I'm going to tell you what I'm doing, right? So he does like a physical action. But I do it with my students. I say, okay, this is the pedagogical technique I'm going to do today. We do it, and then we do a little debrief at the end. How'd you like that as a student? What was good about that? What was strong about that, right? Same thing with writing. If we are not naming what we're doing for students, showing them, modeling it for them, they're not going to pick up on those moves, right? How are they going to know how to write a transition if we don't do it for them and help them see how to transition paragraphs and let them try it and give them tips? If we can't name it for them and do it in front of them, they're not going to just pick it up. She says, we're missing something in teaching writing when we assign topics and students respond by going through the motions writing instead of from the heart writing that drives them to write well. Emotion is the engine of the intellect. We write more powerfully when it is from the center of who we are. And as Christian teachers, I also think we want to show our students how all of their life, right, is connected to what we're doing in the classroom. We want to honor them as image bearers. If we think they're creative, if we think they have agency, then our writing pedagogy had better show them that they can be creative and have agency in the things that they're writing, that it can matter to their life. So I recently found some of my high school journals that were just really meaningful to me, and I was a passionate writer about things that were really important to me, right? I think about the pieces of writing in my life that have meant the most to me. My grandfather's obituary, right? An article about my daughter that I published on a blog. Those things, I needed craft to be able to do, but the craft came out because I was very passionate about them. And not all of our writing assignments can be connected to story and emotion. I know we have academic goals we have to hit, right? But we can show them writing moves inside things that they're passionate about writing in ways that are low risk, in quick writes, in notebooks, by providing time to free write daily, giving them prompts that they're actually interested in, and providing that space to do so can show them and teach them moves that they can then take into all kinds of genres of writing. And so that is the approach that Kittle uses in her workshops. So they quick write, they do things, she'll teach them different moves, different genres, and you'll get a taste of that here in a minute. And then they'll take those and they'll incorporate them into longer, more formal pieces. And so the power of those casual quick writes is that they can learn the skills and the moves as writers that they can then use in more formal and longer pieces. So what we're going to do today together, she also advocates for teachers to write at the same time as her students and to share those things with her students. So we are going to try as
teachers a writing exercise. So I'm going to have you actually do some writing today. If you have a device, you may gladly use your device to write if you prefer. You can also use the back of the paper. You should have a pen. Okay? So we're going to do a quick write. And how another book that I have on my resources list is from Linda Reef. And she has a quick write book. She says a quick write is a first draft response to a short piece of writing, usually no more than one page of poetry or prose, a drawing or an excerpt from a novel, or a short picture book. It can also be a response to a prompt or idea. And here are the rules. You're going to write the entire time. I'm going to give us about 7 or 8 minutes. Okay? We're going to write quickly without letting the censor in our head censor us. We're just going to, it's not a finished product. It's the process. Okay, so we're just going to try to write without censoring ourselves. And we're going to relax and have fun and play. A great quote from this Linda Reef book is from Don Murray. And he says, "I write for the simple fun of making something I did not know I could make. I return to my childhood when a jumble of blocks becomes a tower, collapses, and becomes a castle." Right? So it's play. And it's also a time for us to discover things we didn't know were there. Have you ever started writing a piece and something came out that you didn't know was in you? Right? And we need to let students discover that as well. And sometimes it takes a good prompt. So we're going to do that with, hopefully, a good prompt. I've done this with my students. So we start every class period of my English methods class with a prompt and a quick write. And they've turned those into different things. And then I also use my dot cam quite often and show them my writing. And I model for them how they can model the students, how to take something and bring it to a finished product, how to edit it. We work on different skills. And I'll give you a list of those pretty soon. But I have a piece of writing in your packet. Anybody come in late that still needs one of these? Okay. So if you turn the page from your GoGoMo, there's a piece in there called My Father's Voice by Tom Romano. So what we're going to do is I'm going to read this piece. You can follow along. It's not super long. And we're going to, on the bottom, there's some questions there, reading like a writer. So I'm going to preview those questions for you so you can think. What do you notice about how the text was written? I want you to underline phrases you notice repeating, or notice how examples to support ideas are written. Where does the writer show, not tell? Why do you think Mr. Romano chose to write the piece this way? And what might you try in your writing? So those are the questions we're going to consider at the end. So first, I'm just going to read. All right, Oxford, Ohio. This Sunday is Father's Day, a time to remember dear old dad. One of commentator Tom Romano's fondest memories is hearing his father's voice. I remember my father calling my name on a summer evening in the late 1950s when I was a boy in northeastern Ohio. As night fell, I played wiffle ball with neighbor kids in the yard behind Doc Steyer's office. We'd all promised to be home before dark, but no one was willing to break the spell. Our play was summer and friendship and a tad of rebellion to be outside in the descending night beyond the time our parents set to be home. Then came my father's voice, short, booming, unmistakable, calling my name. My father's voice. No trace in it of an Italian accent. He had been in America since 1914 when he left Nola, a village near Naples, he then a boy of 9. My father's voice still strong at 54 years old, though he would be dead at 59, the victim of 2 drag racers roaring down a public road, smashing head-on into his car. My father's voice calling from behind the screen door of our apartment over his tavern and bowling alleys. He had owned those businesses since 1940, after years of working in the brickyards that had drawn Italian immigrants to Malvern, Ohio. My father's voice rising into the night sky, carrying over rooftops, alley, and neighbors' yards to land in my ears where I played with friends in the yard behind Doc Sire's office. I ran all the way home toward the warm yellow light emanating from our apartment. My father had worked hard to be successful in America. And like the Italian accent he naturally left behind when he learned English, he also left behind his ethnicity. There's a photograph in an oval frame of my father and 2 of his brothers, taken after the family arrived in America.
Giuseppe, Antonio, and Felice, my father, all dressed in soft caps with short bills, belted waistcoats, white shirts buttoned to their necks, knickers and sturdy leather shoes laced over their ankles. Looks, says the photo, a print of which was surely sent to relatives in Italy. Look how well we are doing in America. I heard my father speak Italian only to immigrants who had come to America when they were adults and never learned English with the ease and facility their children did. Otherwise, my father spoke no Italian. The old country was a distant memory that had little to do with the identity he had forged for himself. He was an American businessman. He valued decorum, disliked clannishness, discouraged talk in his tavern about politics and religion. Those led to loud arguments which were bad for business. I once asked an uncle of mine, Gigi Schiavari, my father's brother-in-law, who lived to be 93, why he had come to America. Why I come across, Uncle Gigi said, same reason everybody come across. You make a better living, a better home, a better life. That's what my father had done. 42 years now since his death when I was 15. 42 years since I have heard his voice. But writing this, I hear it now. My father's voice at twilight on a summer evening in small town America. My father's voice calling me home. So take a minute and look at those questions I previewed at the beginning and just jot a couple of things down. You don't have to answer all of them, but anything that sticks out to you. So we're using this as a little bit of a model. What do you notice about how the text was written? Anything?
Short paragraphs.
Short paragraphs.
He ends with my father's voice calling me home, and there are all of these like paragraphs about how America became home for him. So
yeah.
There's connections to calling and home.
Right, and he starts that way too, calling him home from playing. Yeah. Anything else you notice? What repeating phrases does he use? Yeah, go ahead.
There are a lot of technically incomplete sentences.
Yes.
Which could be interesting, like thematically trying to pull together pieces of this, like.
Right. Right. So stylistic choices that he's made with language elements.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's not sequential.
Okay.
It's always these that are out of order.
Okay.
The term my father just keeps saying it.
Yeah.
In every paragraph, so you start to feel like there's this incredible love.
Okay. The repetition. Yeah.
There's emotion.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Sandra Cisneros' vignettes and
Yeah. Great connection. Okay. What I want you to do is to write for 7 or 8 minutes. I'm going to start my timer. And I have my, this is what I use with my students. I give them books at the beginning of the year. I let them decorate them how they want. And I say, this is going to be our corporate journal. And we often share out of them. And so what we're going to do is you can write wherever you are. I didn't give every one of you a journal, I'm sorry. But I do with my students in a class. And we're going to write for 7 or 8 minutes about someone's voice that you know well. Okay? So choose someone's voice you know well, and we're going to write for about 7 or 8 minutes. That's the only rule, is you can't stop writing, and you can't let yourself be censored. Doesn't have to be a finished product like this at the end. This is, remember, it's like rough draft material. Okay? All right, I'm going to start my timer, and I'm going to write with you. Go. would try to come to a stopping point. Thank you for writing with me. We are going to share. I'm going to read a little piece of mine, and this is an invitation. It's not a requirement, but if you are feeling brave or you just want to share a line or two or a piece of your writing, we would love, I think, to hear it as a community. And this is the part where in a classroom, you're going to have to start small here, right? You're going to have to start with something that's not really emotionally risky. Right? So you're going to have to start with a piece of quick writing. If you're going to ask students to share, you want to start with a low bar, easy hanging fruit. So favorite songs or children's shows, right? Like reach back into their memory for something that's not risky, but they might have a lot to say about, have fond memories of, and build up to hopefully create a classroom where you can have a safe environment to share some of your writing, because that's where the real kind of magic happens. And I found that even with college students, they need to start, right? Even with a group of majors, people they know pretty well, sometimes you have to start slow. And then once you can get one student kind of on board with that, the others, it usually snowballs. So I'm going to go first. I've done this exercise a couple of times, and I've written about my daughters, so I chose to just write about my son this time. He just turned 8. So he's at the real fun age where I feel like he's on the cusp of being like a big kid, right? So he's kind of growing out. And when he was little, he had the best lisp, and he couldn't pronounce R's. And I sat here and I tried to capture some of it on paper so I would have it, and I can't remember the way that he said some of the words that he used to say, right? It's already slipping. This is what I wrote. I'm already forgetting the way he pronounced some of his words, besides the ones that were really familiar, like his sister's names. And my memory holes are filling with him saying things like bruh, or reciting football statistics, or singing 80s songs that he learned at his neighbor's house that I didn't even know he knew. He was singing Journey yesterday when I came home, right? His voice hasn't changed yet, hasn't gotten deeper, but it has changed. He is not a little kid, though still my baby. I pray he uses his voice for more than football statistics or bruh, right? That he continues to ask his teacher to fill in Bible stories with more details, to tell his sisters he loves them, to make the most profound observations that I sometimes have to look in the backseat and say, where did you get that, right? I hope he keeps being funny. I hope he grows into it. I hope his voice is confident. And that's as far as I got. So would anyone else be willing to share just a little piece? Yeah, please.
So I had a daughter who came from Haiti when she was 5, and that was an awesome process of language and voice. So that's what I wrote about. So it's not that long. Can I just read
Yeah, please do.
So I wrote, Angie's voice has changed in the 4 years she's been in our family. She was so silent and timid when she first came, muttering Creole phrases that we tried hard to guess at. Gotta go to the bathroom? Hungry? Tired? And so the guessing went. As she gradually picked up English, we witnessed a sort of Creole English emerge from a louder, yet gravelly voice. Sentences began in Creole but morphed into English about halfway through, or they flipped around every third word or so. That gravelly voice became stronger still. We watched her brain process in Creole but spit out English. We heard Angie grappling for an English word by being totally silent. Descriptions became necessary and then indispensable. Her accent, such a beautiful French flowy accent, is almost all replaced now with harsher American sounds. Mm. And the volume, sweet mercy, the volume has increased. I can hear her call desperately, Mom, when she's unsure of where I am. She can be at our top floor, me doing laundry in the basement, and I'll hear her voice cut clear through our floors.
Thank you. Good job.
Anyone else? Thank you. It's beautiful. Yes, please.
So I also read another in June.
Okay. I'm sorry.
A voice that held me together for 23 years is now a memory. I remember my grandmother's voice saying, do it with everything you have. In almost every conversation, this came up. The advice she gave from her comfy brown recliner were pieces of gold. These pieces of gold I carry with me every single day as I walk into my classroom. Do it with everything you have. It's on my mind every single day. The way she would say it with such conviction still pricks my mind and heart, especially when I don't do it. Her laugh rises in my spirit and mind as we watch The Price is Right or when we bake pound cakes and 7-Up cakes. This laughter could change the temperature in any room. This laugh fills my classroom and reminds me to have joy no matter what is going on. I continue to laugh because I know that God has me like he had my grandmother. 89 years of doing what we got is what I remember.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Anyone else?
I wrote about my cat, and when he meows, it sounds like a baby crying.
I love it.
So yesterday, as I was taking out the trash, I heard him meowing, but I didn't see him. And I thought, like, my son was crying, but it was weird because if the baby's crying, my son's no longer a baby. And so it's like a flashback.
I love that. That's great. Thank you for sharing. Yes, please.
I wrote about my daughter's voices.
Okay.
Mommy, I hear it in the wee hours of the morning, and it startles me. But like a well-oiled machine, I run through the dark bin room and down to my daughter's room. Mommy, I hear again. She mumbles some gibberish, and I can tell she's had a bad dream. I hug her and lay her back down, telling her it was only a dream. Go back to bed. I love you. As I mosey back to my room, I glance at the clock. 3:41 a.m. I have to get up in 3 hours. I'm exhausted, but I responded to the still small voice of my daughter. I know these voices like the back of my hand in all of their forms, whispering secrets among sisters. Mommy, I love you. Belting out the latest worship song, and even the most popular of all, the bickering and screaming that happens daily. Those voices won't be here forever, so I pray that I treasure them, the noise in all of its forms. May I always cherish Mommy.
Thank you. Okay, I want you to notice how many writing moves that you all just made. Right, in a 7 or 8 minute writing prompt, we're making up words, Creole English, right? Analogies, we're flashing back, we're using time. There was a biblical allusion, right? There was dialogue, okay? So if you think about all the writing moves that you make in telling stories and all of the possibilities that are there, for teaching voice and for teaching mechanics and for teaching good writing moves, right? They're all there. So how would you use it? You can use this technique, this quick writing process where you're asking them, you're giving them a model, you're showing them something, you're using it to draw a memory out of them, some sort of small piece of writing. You can use it to teach process. So as a teacher, you can put yours up, you can have them help you revise. I'm going to show you an example from my journal of that in a minute. You can teach it to reread or expand. You can teach it to use it to teach multiple drafts of a piece. Hopefully their journals become a place where they can draw out more formal pieces of writing. It becomes like you have to write a lot of material in order to get something good, right? So it becomes raw material for their polished writing. You can teach skills. We just talked about punctuation, writing moves. We talked about how his style, he used unconventional grammar. Controlling time, like flashbacks. Reading like a writer, like we did when we looked at those questions at the beginning. So when you give them a piece, you can say, okay, what did this writer do? How do you read like a writer instead of just reading like a reader? How do you notice the moves this writer is making? So that you can benefit from them as a writer. You can also generate product. You can do different genre studies. You can play with poetry. You can play with different elements of text, how to put a text together. These are all ways that you can use the QuickWrite model. Here's something. This is from one of my journals that I did with my class, where I was teaching the difference between summary or snapshot and like a drawn out show don't tell. So what I did was I had them do this same exercise. Do a snapshot of an event that happened to you recently and then write it frame by frame like a movie. And so this is my, I had come to class the day after my daughter had gotten bitten by a dog in my neighborhood. So the top is a snapshot of it, and then it's the drawn out version. And you can see as I put it on the dot cam with my students, I have little notes here where they, like, as I was writing, I was talking through and I said, okay, I need more details there. Do I need more background here? And I would ask my students, was this enough background? Do you need more here? And they would kind of weigh in. My middle daughter has type 1 diabetes, and she's the one who got bit. And so I wanted to incorporate a little bit more of that because it speaks to part of the story. So I didn't know where to put it, so I had a couple question marks, and I said I didn't know, or expand this. Circle back here, and I maybe want to put it there. And so I talked through this whole thing with my students and helped them see what I was thinking about as a writer, about how I could polish this into a better piece. You can also use pictures. My students love to draw in their notebooks. You can see the far right example I used there was a prompt about place. And I drew my grandparents' farm, where I spent hours and hours as a kid. And I got a poem out of it in the middle. And so that prompt was something about drawing a place you love and writing something about that place. And so we've done music, kind of songs of your heart is a prompt that they like. And so we do like a heart and some of the songs that we love. That's always a good one. That might be low-hanging fruit for your students to talk about music that they really love, different ways. And there are a lot of professional resources out there to help you with mentor text and quick writes. So I put those up here. I have all of these books up here if you want to quickly browse them. This 2021 book is a great book full of mentor text with prompts of poems and different kind of short essays, things that are good for student like material that to write from. The QuickWrite Handbook, it also has 100 mentor texts and prompts in it, as well as what those prompts might help you work on in your student writing. The Writing Strategies books, I don't know if you are familiar with Jennifer Cervallo's work, awesome things to write, to learn about, okay, how are we going to use a writing strategy here and connect that to the QuickWrites you're doing. And then the Penny Kittle book we've been looking at quotes from is on the end, and that's the one that will be available here. So that's kind of how I use QuickWrites and the possibility of it. I think as we think about the possibility of our students learning more about themselves, connecting to the things that they care about, and also learning skills along the way in a model, I also think it's important for us as teachers to realize that we shouldn't be asking our students to do things we're not doing ourselves. I think it's really important that we practice our craft in front of them. I think it's powerful. And I also think, like, just those 10 minutes I spent writing and listening to you read writing were incredibly powerful for me. It's going to be the highlight of my day, I think. And so thank you for those of you who shared. And I want you to also, by experiencing that, realize the possibility that this practice has for your classroom, if done well. So I just want to end today on the back, the last sheet of paper. I just have a really quick, I used to think, now I know, prompts. So if you will, it doesn't have to be just one thing. You can write a couple of things, but just take some time to reflect. I used to think, now I know. Okay, in the spirit of invitation, does anyone want to share any of their final reflections using the prompt? Maybe you're not quite done.
This is kind of simple, but I did write down, like a lot of times I see free write, like that could be kids just like staring at their papers.
Yeah.
So I did like your idea of saying like start with the low hanging fruit, like get some things that are like easy for them or are low risk.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was the takeaway.
Good, thank you.
Can I slightly add to the prompt?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'm just going to go now. I wonder, I noticed, I think you mentioned this briefly, but like all the modeling began with modeling how to read first.
Yeah.
Do you read that? Do you do the same thing? Like you put the document camera down, put the document, read it with the students and show you kind of like externally processing?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great idea. Yep. So it's the modeling. It's like a read aloud, think aloud sort of combo. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times like we'll go through the questions at the end and we'll go back and we'll like point things out. Yep. And do that more of a longer process. Yeah. Anything else?
I used to think teaching writing was primarily about clarity. Now I know teaching writing must tap into students' passions to empower voice.
Yeah, that's a great realization. And I think the clarity comes eventually. Mm-hmm. Clarity is still important, right? But it has to start somewhere meaningful. Yeah.
So I was kind of in the habit of reading with my students.
Yeah.
They have reading time. And I was like, oh, this is so great. Never, ever, ever done that with writing. Ever. Not once. And so it just seems like a very natural progression.
Right.
She's so successful with reading.
Yep.
Because like, oh, this is what she does. Like,
yes.
It seems like a natural switch.
Like, if she can do it, then I can do it too. Yeah, and just being that model. Absolutely. But we don't think of doing it with writing.
Right.
Yeah. Powerful. Anything else? Yeah.
Is there a way that we can access your presentation after?
I do have a handout. If you'd like to stay and give me your email address, I can send you like the slides. Sure.
Awesome.
Yep. Yeah. Anything else? Okay, well, thank you so much for coming. I don't want to keep you. I appreciate your time.